I would like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Murray.
Thank you, Mickey. I'm Murray. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Murray.
Hey, guys. How we doing tonight? Oh, yeah. Just tell me when it's 10 after or something. Okay. I make it that far. Welcome to the newcomer, and happy birthday, Barbie. I'm glad to be here tonight. Thanks for asking me, John, wherever you are. I used to come to this meeting very regularly. In fact, I was at its first meeting. I don't know. God, it's been 4 or 5 years now, I guess. I don't know how long it's been. 4 years anyway. In this room, and there was an AA meeting after this meeting here a little later. That I used to do double duty and go to this meeting and go to that meeting. I'm also a member of the senior circuit, and I've been a member of AA for 25 years. But I'll be quite frank with you, I got 25 years of abstinence there, and I've been able to stay sober by the grace of God, but the truth is I don't feel the pull for alcohol. I haven't for many years, and but I feel the pull for that we share in this disease for compulsive overeating every day, and it's a daily reprieve based on my spiritual condition. And some days are easier and some days are harder, based just exactly on that. And I came to this program first in about 1980 and lost some weight and, you know, started to think I was cured. And I come in, got the cure, and gradually faded away. Let life get in the way. And I was away for 12, 14 years, something like that. By the grace of God, I got back here, and it'll come out in the story. But to qualify, I got back in here a little over 5 years ago, and when I came back, I weighed 707 pounds. And I'm about 375 pounds down from there. Thank you. Pass around some pictures. You know, this is a long chair. it's good. I'm old. So maybe I can fill up parts of it. You know, I was born a big kid, and the picture there, I'm a little pudgy, you know, as a kid, but I grew up a chunky kid. I grew up working in Husky departments. I grew up getting taunted off and on. I found ways to gain acceptance, and I'll talk some more about that in a minute growing up. And I don't want to spend too much time talking about the past, but I grew up a big kid, and I was never tall. I mean, I'm over 6'4 now, but I was like average height, but I was always overweight growing up. And when I was trying to play, you know, little guy football and stuff, they did it by weight classes, so I was always playing with kids 3 years older than I was and stuff like that. And you know, when I was 12 years old, I was wearing my dad's sweatshirts, and you know, I was over 200 pounds at that point in time. I don't know. I look back at those times, and, you know, I know everyone comes from perfect families like I do, but I honestly look back on my childhood, and I think it was a good childhood. I look at my parents and all their flaws and everything, but I know that there was love in the household, but I didn't get to 707 pounds because I was perfectly well adjusted, and I think I came by this disease honestly in a number of ways. I know I was born with the genes that made me susceptible to this disease. It's pretty rampant in my family. I also learned it at the table of a compulsive overeater, and I don't really blame my mom for any of that. She learned from her mother. She probably learned from my great-grandmother, and that's just the way it works. And although I came by it honestly, I'm responsible for what I put in my mouth today. And there's very little blame, and I hope no blame associated with that, because today I'm responsible for the treatment of my disease, and I do that by coming to this 12-step program, this fellowship, and sharing with you guys and working the 12 steps and using the tools, and somehow that keeps me in a good spiritual place so I'm able to abstain every day. It's a freaking miracle, okay? I've been at this weight, very close to this weight, for over 3 years, and that is a miracle. I've never done that before. I went mostly straight up. I had a couple of... I never went to Jenny Craig. I never went to Weight Watchers. I never went to any of those diet clubs where there were a bunch of women with scales. I just didn't do all that stuff. There was a couple of times when I went to a liquid diet protein, liquid diet, and I lost a couple hundred pounds on that. But of course, as soon as I was off it, I was off it. And in fact, the second time was kind of a Murray's hybrid liquid diet, where I was on the liquid diet during the week and I was on pizza over the weekend. And I lost weight at that. That's the amazing thing. I lost weight doing that. And in fact, I was a freaking hero, you know. I was losing weight. I know I could lose weight anyway, but it's a miracle that I'm maintaining any weight loss at all. I mean, I was either going up or going down my whole life. I talked about being old, and I'll get there in a minute. My knee's bothering me, and that reminds me that I'm old. Anyway, I went through high school. I'm one of those people that didn't have a date in high school, didn't go to the prom, didn't do any of that stuff. And then I grew like over 4 inches, like the first year out of high school. And there's a picture there where I can't remember when I was a freshman or sophomore in college, but it was the time of my life where I had the most square relationship with society, with my fellows, with women, with the world in general, with myself. And it wasn't quite square because I was gaining weight. But there was some period of time in there where I weighed about what I weigh now. And it was distributed better than it is now, but I weighed about the same thing. And anyway, I just kept going up. And during that period of time, high school, college, I told you that I figured out a way to get some acceptance. And there was basically two paths there. One was in academics. I was a good student and excelled in science and math and that kind of stuff. And very left brain dominant. And I'll probably talk more about that in a minute. But the other one was through some sports. Even though I was overweight and big, I had good hand-eye coordination. Anyway, it was decent enough in sports to get by, even being overweight. Although I have a lot of resentment still from sports stuff that I work on from time to time when they surface again. Someone asked me not too long ago if I could have been a Major League Baseball player if I was thin. And I thought about it for a second. I said no, because I couldn't hit a Major League curveball. And I even know that today. So all that pipe dream is just a pipe dream anyway. Anyway, I gained weight steadily, and then I came in Overeaters Anonymous in 1980. And I managed to get through college. I ate my way through for a good, let's see, I went to three schools getting through college and undergraduate, graduate, all that stuff. But anyway, the first one and the largest impression was at Texas A&M University. And it had the largest dining hall in the free world at that time. I don't know whether it still is or not. And it was just a huge place. And the food was, you know, steam tables and all that kind of stuff. But there was always a certain kind of food that you could go back for seconds and thirds on, you know. And it was usually, you know, the most healthy things you can think of. It was like mac and cheese. They'd have mac and cheese for seconds and thirds or you know, hamburger pie or something. But I continued to eat all the way through college. I got through college, started working, just kept eating. And I came to Overeaters Anonymous. I lost a lot of weight. Got married, let life get in the way. That's the bottom line. I let life get in the way. There's a saying in AA, you know, program first, work second, family third. And that's kind of the order that they see there, because if you can't have the one below unless you've got the one above. And that's kind of the way I do the program right now. I have to put program first. And work a second, marginally above family and friends. And I don't know, things stay in order pretty well that way. But anyway, I got to Overeaters Anonymous, lost some weight, let life get in the way, and went back out. And then, I told you I lost a couple hundred pounds. And I had three top weights. I had 586, 611, and 707. So those are kind of my top weights. I had been at a lower weight. The first time I was in Overeaters Anonymous, I was actually lower. But I was much younger then. I don't know how I became a compulsive overeater exactly, but I know I don't have a sane relationship with food, and I don't have a bulimic or anorexic bone in my body, but when I hear anorexics and bulimics speak from the podium, I recognize the thinking, because it's kind of like mine, and it's pretty diseased and pretty all over the place. And somehow, when I've got another human being in my life, my sponsor, that I have things to check out with, and I come to meetings and I work the program, I'm able to get through life one day at a time. And it is a daily reprieve. I still commit my food daily. I live in the world, if I have to change it, it's not a real standard meal or something, I'm going to talk about it the next day. One of the definitions of abstinence is guilt-free eating. And if it's in my head, it needs to come out of my mouth. If some kind of food is in my head, it needs to come out of my mouth. And I need to tell another human being about it. And somehow I manage to get through it. And I have to talk about it the next morning a lot. Not a lot, some. I don't know. I need that sounding board. I need that release mechanism. Writing it down by itself doesn't quite do it for me, and I'm not quite sure why. And my sponsor doesn't give a shit what I'm eating. Basically doesn't care. He may comment from time to time. It's kind of funny about sponsors, and I'm a sponsor, and I'm sponsored, and Thursday night I saw my grand sponsor speak, but it's not Dr. Heal Thyself here. I mean, I forget, this was maybe 6 months ago, and I was talking to my sponsor, and I had something obsessing and going on in my head, and he just said, well, if one of your sponsees came to you with this, what would you tell them to do? I had no goddamn idea what to do. And he said, why don't you write about it? He said, oh, yeah, that's what I tell them, But it didn't come to me. It did not come to me. It is not an automatic default condition to pick up a tool. I'm pretty good about using the phone. I'm pretty good about coming to meetings. I'm pretty good about most of the tools, but writing and a couple others maybe I don't use as well as I could. But any tool works. If you're having a problem, pick up a tool. That's what it's there for. It's a toolbox. You carry it around with you. If you got a problem, one of those damn tools fits that problem. And and talking to another member of this program or to a machine of a member of this program often helps a lot. I don't know why that is. Reading literature often helps a lot. Any tool works. Any tool works. I don't usually pick up anonymity. I'm not quite sure what that one fits, but it's there. Anyway, I got here. And I left. And I was working away all this time. I told you I was very left brain dominated. I'm an engineer, work for an engineering firm, yada, yada, yada. And, but man, I was ballooning up. There's no logic in it. There's no nothing. It's just a disease. And I was breaking down. I was barely able to walk 50 yards. You know, it was a thing about I didn't know what was going to give out first, my cardiovascular system, my back, or my knees. I had to rest, and I had to stretch things, and I could go on a little more. And I wasn't able to do my job. I was sitting in my office, you know, not drinking anything, so I didn't have to make too many trips to the restroom during the day. And, you know, the drawer of the desk was... One side was salty stuff, and the other side was sweet stuff. You know, it was that kind of thing. But somehow I held on to the job until, okay. And this is a little over 5 years ago. I had a meeting called with my boss, and I walked into my boss's office, and there were two people on his couch, introduced ourselves, and I sat down expecting I don't know what, and the boss walked out the door and closed it behind me. Oh, shit. Anyway, it turns out that there was a woman and a man, and the woman was an HR person, and the guy was a psychiatrist that's on staff at this company I work for, and he's an intervention specialist. One of only two people I'm aware of that had interventions officially done on them. There's lots of friendly interventions, lots of family interventions and things like that, and they're all good and they're all great and all that kind of stuff. But this was one of those professionally done things. And anyway, I ended up in a treatment center, and that led me back to Overeaters Anonymous. Treatment facility, there was compulsive overeaters, there were bulimics, there were anorexics, were all sizes, shapes, ages, although I wasn't quite the oldest one there. I don't know. Somehow it got me back into Overeaters Anonymous, and this is where my program lies today. And I have... there was a psychiatrist at this facility, and I still see that psychiatrist privately, not often, every 2, 3, 4 weeks, something like that. But, I walk in there, I think all the way there, what the hell am I going to talk about today? Because, and eventually I fill up the damn hour, and I feel better when I leave. It's just like kind of coming to a meeting. I don't always want to come, and somebody was talking about that earlier. I don't always want to come, but I always feel better when I leave, and that's another miracle of the program. Anyway, I got back. I started abstaining. I started losing weight, and I'm one of those people. I'll talk about my absence a little bit. I got to an abstinence as quickly as I could with something I thought I could perhaps live with my whole life. And that's where I am right now. I have 3 meals a day and a fruit snack late in the evening, 9 or so. And I abstain from sugar. And I'm off of caffeine now for my heart, but I have personal binge foods. I stay away from those binge foods. There are certain combinations of foods I cannot eat. I mean, I eat everything that's on a pizza, basically, but I can't eat pizza. And I know I can't eat pizza sanely. If there's a lunch at work and they bring pizza, I know I can't have it. I can't have one bite because I got to have everything. And I always buy too freaking much. basically, I'll eat everything that's in trail mix, but I can't have trail mix. I can eat a few raisins in my oatmeal. I can have a few nuts on a salad or in some Chinese food. I can have those things, but you put it together and I can't handle it. And I don't know what that's about, but it's just the way it is. And I've come to accept most of those things most of the time. And I do abstain from personal binge foods. And that's not to say if I was on a desert island and all there was a 50-pound bag of trail mix, and I would probably have some trail mix. You know, my biggest addictions were fat, right? Did I binge on sugar? The answer is yes. Of course I binged on sugar. It's good. But the big thing for me was fat, bread, those kind of things. I mean, greasier burritos are better. I don't know if you guys talk about food, but those were the kind of addictions I went to. My thing was to, you know, if I'm on the way home from work, I'm driving through a mom-and-pop burger joint. Not generally a McDonald's, not generally a Burger King, although those were sometimes. But, you know, I wanted a greasy place. I wanted a place and that's what I would buy. And I would buy many bags of food. I would eat out of those bags on the way home. And I'd get home and change clothes and sit down on the couch and I would consume what was in those bags. And then I would pass out. And there's no other word for it, passing out. I passed out a lot more times from overeating than I ever did from alcohol, many times more. I never woke up in the bushes from compulsive overeating, but I did pass out a lot more times. Anyway, I'd be passed out on the couch, and, you know, I'd wake up several times, several hours later, and I would get up, I would go to the kitchen, I would gather whatever was in the kitchen, in the refrigerator, and I would proceed to binge again until I fell asleep, and I'd get up the next day, and I'd start all over again. And I was completely obsessed. I wanted to know not where my next meal was coming from, but where my next bite was coming from. Did I eat in secret? Yes. But I did eat in public from time to time. And I got my abstinence sometime like a year after Hometown Buffets started business. And I'm quite certain their stock plummeted after I got abstinent. But I don't eat that way today. Do I still have some eating issues? Yes, I still eat too fast. I'm still what one would call a quantity eater. They're healthy quantities, but I'm still a quantity eater. But it's pretty square meals. Now, if I go, see, a lot of places they serve large portions, but that's about what I'm eating today. I go to a place, and to me it's a square meal. So I get, you know, chicken plain. I don't get gravy on it. I keep the sauces off to the best of my ability. I don't want butter on anything. I don't do the kinds of things that I know that are unhealthy for me. And the food is satisfying. My girlfriend last night said, "Look in the refrigerator, it'll make you happy." And I said, "It always makes me happy." And she bought some Stewart's Black Cherry Diet Cola. And that's very good stuff. That's what was in there that made me happy. So there was a little surprise there. But I have a... Serenity is a little too strong most of the time, but I have a peace with my relationship with food. And I say serenity is too strong because if I was absolutely serene when I sit down to a meal, I wouldn't feel the power of this disease. And I feel it when I sit down and I eat. I feel the power of this disease. I'm glad I've ordered what I've ordered. I'm glad I've got it in front of me. You know, when it's over, I'm glad I got another one coming, either later on in the day or the next morning. But I am quite glad that I'm able to eat what's in front of me and not binge. And I don't know how it happens. I don't understand why. As I said, I was very left-brain dominant, and I am very left-brain dominant. But this program does not lend itself to being figured out. Okay? It doesn't lend itself to that. That's where the leap of faith comes in. It's where God comes in. And it's where action comes in. Faith is great, but without the works, without the action, it ain't more shit. Okay? Somebody in this program once said if you were left alone in a room with God and the Twinkie, that Twinkie would become a vegetable. And that's the way it would have been, and what's the way it is for me. And I got to have that other person. I got to have people in program in my lives. And said, no, that's a Twinkie. Looks like a Twinkie. Barks like a Twinkie. Must be a Twinkie. And anyway, I don't eat Twinkies or any what I'll call recreational sugar. You know, recreational sugar is kind of like pornography. You can't define it, but you know it when you see it. there's sugar and fruit, but God put it in there. God put it in there. Good enough for me, okay? And I feel good about my food almost every day. It's amazing how your food straightens out a few days before you leave a meeting. I have sponsees when they start having trouble with their food, and I try to practice this myself. I say eat standard foods in standard places. Don't go outside the boundaries. Go where you abstained before. Put together what you abstained before. And that's what I tend to do. I tend to put together what I used to abstain before. And, of course, I don't cook. I don't really cook. I kind of assemble things, but I don't cook. And I don't know. I'm just grateful every day for this program. I'm grateful every day for my abstinence. And It's kept me alive. I'm quite certain I would be dead today if it wasn't for this program. And I say that with a certainty because I was not in good shape when I got back into this program. And, you know, I was telling you my knee's bad and it's really terrible. Both knees are pretty rotten. And I have other scars from carrying that weight around all those years and playing sports and being overweight all over the years. I have arthritis, and I got a bad heart, and you know, I've got circulation problems in my leg. I used to get these awful ulcers on, but by the grace of God, I haven't had one of those in like 4 years or something like that. And they would get infected. I ended up in the hospital at one time. You know, big putting broad spectrum IVs, broad spectrum antibiotics into me, trying to get my fever down. I was delirious. I don't go there anymore. I don't have those issues anymore. I'm grateful. I'm grateful my time is good. I'll thank Jalen again for asking me to be here, and I'm grateful for you all. I'm so grateful for this program. I'm grateful to be upright. I'm grateful not. I'm so grateful for my abstinence. Back-to-back abstinence is one of is so wonderful. You go through things, and you go through issues, you go through problems, you go through shit, and you go through it abstinently, and it gives you momentum to get through whatever the life is going to bring to you next. And I feel that today. Is it by the grace of God that I have a daily reprieve? The answer is yes. But I have so much confidence that I'm going to abstain tomorrow. Right? I know there's no guarantees, no goddamn guarantees at all, but I have a lot of confidence. I just know it in my gut that I'm going to be abstaining tomorrow. And it's a wonderful feeling to have to go to bed at night and know that I'm going to abstain tomorrow and I get breakfast. I'm going to end with that. Thank you. I guess it's time for a few questions, and I was told to repeat the questions, so if you don't want it on tape, don't ask. Who's got a question?
Here. What was your relationship, if any, with God, or the idea of God, before you finished the program, and how did that evolve into whatever relationship you
The question was, is before program, did I have a relationship to God, and how did it develop after program, and what's that relationship now?
Yeah.
Well, there wasn't much of a relationship. I at best, was a belligerent agnostic. Perhaps the most important chapter in the big book is the chapter to the agnostic. It's certainly the one I read the most, okay? But I really believe that it was, you know, my spiritual awakening certainly was no thunderbolt. It was certainly no sudden awakening. It was more of the erosion variety that it talks about in the big book as well. And I still don't have what I would call, you know, a plugged-in relationship with God. You know, I'm going down the freeway and I'm talking to God. Now, that doesn't happen. I usually plug into God in the meetings. I see God's miracles in other people. I see God's miracles in other people almost all the time. And it's not so much in a personal conversation, but it's in personal observation, you know. Newton didn't know that there was a law of gravity. It suddenly started seeing the apples drop, and being a good engineer, he figured out there was gravity. I see God's evidence in the world, and I believe in it today. I guess that's what I'm at. Next. Sure.
Thank you so much for your share. Can you talk about your experience working on Steps 6 and 7?
Well, 6 and 7, the question was, is what was my experience with 6 and 7. Again, involved in God. I guess I started off ready, all right? But I think the biggest thing is, I don't know what the biggest thing is, but it's probably 7 in being humble. You know, my biggest danger is my ego. And I'm pretty sure it was ego-based self-centeredness that got me out of the program the first time. Okay, I got my shit together, I'm gone. Okay, and it talks about being humble and humbly asking God to relieve those shortcomings. And I can't say, is any of my character defects?